You're listening to the Foul Ball Area podcast with Matthew Atkins, now available on Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and Apple Podcasts. Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Foul Ball Area podcast, a special Friday edition of the podcast. I want to thank you all for tuning in today, lending me your ears for the next couple of minutes as we talk about some baseball. Before we dive into today's topics, I want to remind you to follow Foul Ball Area on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Foul Ball Area. That's the handle on all of our social media accounts. Also, make sure to check out the website, see what's going on the blog. We've got a cool series going on right now, taking a look at the best season in each team's history in Major League Baseball. We've done the entire National League East. Now we're moving into the National League Central, taking a look at the Cubs and the Reds today, looking at their best season in franchise history. I think it's a cool blog series, so make sure to check that out if you haven't already. On Wednesday, I talked with Taiwan Times baseball writer Mark Buckton about the Chinese Professional Baseball League in Taiwan. It was a really cool interview, so check that episode out if you haven't already. He had some really great insight on the CPBL and its increase in popularity and whether or not the league can continue the momentum that it has going for it right now. It was the first professional baseball league anywhere in the world to start its season in 2020. Now the KBO in Korea has started play also, so it's lost a little bit of momentum, but still gotten a lot of international attention this year due to being the only league in play. So check out that interview. Check out the CPBL if you haven't already. The games are live and free on Twitter every morning. They start around 6:30 in the morning, but they usually go until 10 or 11, so you can catch the last couple innings. It's good. It's baseball. It's free. Check it out if you haven't already. Now, today's topics, despite the fact that there is no baseball in the United States right now, there's still a lot of news coming out at all levels of baseball, especially at the college level. A lot of developments have happened recently. A lot of kind of bad news has happened over the past couple of days and weeks. And so to talk about what's going on in the world of college baseball, a very special guest, co-editor and national writer of D1Baseball.com, Aaron Fitt, joining me on the podcast today. Aaron, I know on a normal baseball season, you'd be traveling around the country, going to different schools. What are you doing to keep yourself busy this year?
Well, I'm just trying to stay sane any way I possibly can. In my case, it's a lot of miles on the Peloton and trying to get out for some hikes when I can, and hitting the golf course now that those are open back up. So doing what I can, but I'll tell you, it's weird not having college baseball around. This has been the strangest spring of my life. I think it's been 16 or 17 years since I've had a Memorial Day off, so I don't know what I'm going to do with myself this weekend.
Yeah, I'm sure it is very strange, and there's still a lot of news going on around the college baseball world, and it's kind of tough to know where to start, but I think we should start with the teams that are getting cut from their schools. A couple of schools, Bowling Green and Furman, have already cut their baseball teams, and Chicago State may cut their team. I saw that they had tabled that discussion for now. How far do you think this goes, and how many teams do you think end up getting cut due to the economic effects of coronavirus?
I'm certainly really worried about it. I think that this could just be the tip of the iceberg. I hope it doesn't get that bad, of course, but I'll be surprised if we don't have 5 or 10 more anyway that cut their programs. And again, I hope it doesn't come to that, but the way things are going, I mean, there's so much uncertainty with college athletics right now, and the budget hit that everybody took from not getting the NCAA tournament basketball money, that these 11 tournaments really rely upon. I mean, that's a major factor. And of course, there's other budget concerns as a result of this pandemic. Enrollment numbers are probably going to be down for a lot of college schools and maybe all of them. I mean, everybody might be facing a numbers crunch in that department. I just think operating costs, it makes sense that schools are trying to cut costs, and baseball programs do lose money, all but a handful of them. The reason that these programs exist is because schools believe that it's a good thing to have a robust athletic program, but they do it really for the benefit of the student athletes. I mean, if you're a firm in Bowling Green, and you know, they never were in it to make money. And so I do think it's probably inaccurate to say that, well, they're just using this pandemic as cover to cut the program because they wanted to do it anyway. I mean, if they wanted to do it anyway, they could have just done it anytime they wanted. Because you know, the program has lost money for 100 years. So what difference does it make? I think really these schools hate to make these decisions because, you know, they obviously value these athletic programs. And it's a shame that it's come to this, but that's the reality we're facing.
Another thing that was a big effect of COVID-19 and the cancellation of this spring sports season was a lot of the athletes gained an extra year of eligibility to make up for this year. Were you in favor of giving those athletes that extra year?
Yeah, I just think it's hard not to, you know, when you're a student athlete and your season is cut short after 4 weeks of a 16-week season, you know, before the postseason. You really kind of got robbed of a whole year. And so I think it was the right thing to do for the players. It's just, you know, now comes the difficult part of implementing all this. You know, we're certainly going to have significant roster crunches, and largely that's because Major League Baseball is trimming its draft to 5 rounds, which I just think is really a bad thing for the players and for the sport in general to limit opportunities like that. But a lot of players now that we expected would sign as juniors and that, you know, these athletic programs had already been planning to replace. I mean, if you're LSU and you know these 8 guys are almost certainly going to wind up signing after this year, you better recruit to replace them. Otherwise, how are you going to compete year after year? You know, I don't think the schools are doing anything irresponsible by planning to, you know, replace the draftable juniors that they almost always lose. It's just that, you know, a pandemic happened and Major League Baseball, you know, slashed its draft. And so now you're going to have a bunch of those juniors that are probably going to want to come back. You're still going to have your freshmen coming in. And you probably will have more freshmen coming in than you expected because some of the guys you may be anticipating losing to the draft out of the high school ranks, they might wind up coming to school now because there's only 5 rounds in the draft. And so you're going to have a numbers crunch. And unless the NCAA gives some relief to these roster sizes, I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know where the players are going to go. It's just not going to – the numbers don't work out.
I know the scholarship limit in baseball has been a point of contention for a while. Do you think that this could lead to increased scholarships for college baseball teams?
I would love to see that happen. I don't foresee that happening right now because I don't think that any of these universities are really looking to add costs in this environment. You know, everybody is worried about their budgets, and to me, it seems unlikely that they just say, oh, sure, you want to raise your 11.7, you know, now's the time to do it. I don't think that would have enough traction at this point. I mean, as much as I think that it would really help alleviate some of the scholarship crunches that we're going to face with all these players coming back, I just think it's probably not very likely. But what I would like to see happen, and I think it's very realistic, is, again, you relax the 35-man roster cap, and the restrictions for the number of guys who can get aid. Right now, only 27 out of your 35 players can get any kind of athletic aid, and they all have to have a minimum of 25%. I think you should relax both of those things just to give these coaches more flexibility. And then, you know, maybe you give this guy 15%, you give this guy 35%, whatever it takes to make it work. I just think we need more flexibility right now, not less.
So your colleague Kendall Rogers had a column this morning about Power 5 coaches unveiling a new college baseball model. And among the items in this model is a later season. And they said the point of that is to help out schools in the north who are on the road a lot in the beginning of the regular season. And they said that it could cut travel costs and it could really help teams all across college baseball. What do you think? What do you feel about this proposal?
Yeah, I've been a proponent of this idea for, you know, 15 years now. I mean, it's something that's been floating around for a long time. John Anderson at Minnesota had really pushed for it for years, and Randy Mazey in West Virginia had a great proposal in support of this idea 5 years back or so. And even going back to Skip Bertman at LSU, I mean, he floated this idea back in the 90s. So I think it makes a lot of sense. Baseball is a summer sport, and we started on Valentine's Day. I mean, it's the middle of winter. You know, it makes no sense to start the sport in the middle of wintertime, even in the South. I mean, it's cold. I live in North Carolina, and, you know, we got snowed out on opening weekend one year, you know, and you know, I've been to Florida for opening weekend and you know, froze my butt off because it's still wintertime. You know, in mid-February, and the weather's unpredictable everywhere. So I do think that this maybe has some traction now in the post-COVID-19 era because schools are looking to cut the costs, and this is an opportunity for you to maybe spend a lot less money on travel when, you know, especially half the country has to spend the first month of their season in Florida or Arizona or California, and that's expensive, you know, and so this is really an opportunity for those to cut those early season travel costs. And it also, I think, would help baseball become more financially viable, you know, because even if you look at the attendance numbers in the South, I mean, the big Southern schools, they draw better in April and May than they do in February and March too, you know, because that's when people are thinking about baseball. It's in February and March when it's still basketball season and the weather isn't great yet, even in the South. I mean, I think attendance at that point is not ever going to be maximized. It's just not going to happen. And so if you push it back even into June, and I mean, this proposal, you would have the postseason would be in July, but everyone else would be done. So you could still have summer ball, you know, I mean, you still have players done with their seasons in June and for most of the country and go out and play summer ball. I think it makes a lot of sense in a lot of different ways, but the biggest thing is, you know, if we want baseball to be more stable so that programs don't get cut the next time there's a crisis, this is a really good way to do it. I think you could really make some money in baseball if you have it during baseball months.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I went to Virginia Tech, and covering those games in February and March in Blacksburg, it was brutal at times. It gets pretty cold, and there was some snow and rain, and it's not fun being at a baseball game in that kind of weather.
No, you're exactly right. And it's just, you know, I mean, what was the year? I think it was a couple of years ago, UVA, they spent their whole first month just scrambling to find games, and because they kept getting snowed out also. I think Virginia Tech was facing the same thing. I mean, it's just, you know, and we're talking about Virginia, you know, this is not Boston we're talking about. I mean, it's the South. It's not the deep South, but it's the South. And I don't know. I just think, you know, this is long overdue, and I'm glad that finally we've got a broader base of support for this proposal beyond just the Big Ten. You know, some very prominent coaches are quoted in that story from Kendall this morning. I mean, Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt, and Dan McDonald, and Jim Schlossnagel are three of the titans of our game. You know, if you had a if you had like a Mount Rushmore of currently the most successful and influential coach in college baseball, those three guys would probably all be on it. So, you know, I think having those voices behind this proposal might give it some more weight.
One of the things that I thought of when I saw this proposal, though, was if they're playing games in late May and June, then a lot of the student population won't be there anymore. And I know some schools don't charge students to go to games anyway, so that probably won't affect too much, but that was just something that I thought about. The attendance might not change that much if students aren't in town.
Yeah, and that's something that I think has been a common objection to this proposal over the years. But really, if you look at it, the bulk of most schools' attendance is not the students. You know, yeah, there are a few really great, robust student sections, Texas A&M and Ole Miss. But if you look at the regionals and the super regionals at those places, I mean, you look out beyond the right field fence at Ole Miss in June for a postseason game, they're still packed with students. You know, there's still plenty of students that can drive to the game that live locally or that are there for summer classes or whatever. And even if you do take something of a hit with your student attendance, baseball, I think, does best when it appeals to families and people who live locally. And, you know, there's a natural support base that's kind of built in at any of these major schools. You know, if you think about Michigan, for instance, I mean, that's a powerful brand name. You know, it's a lot more powerful than the Madison Mallards are. And you know, the Mallards outdraw the Michigan Wolverines in baseball by a factor of 3 or 4. I mean, you know, I know they're different cities, but you know, the point is that if you have baseball played during, you know, baseball months, when people are really looking to go out and do something with their family, I think you're going to have just the casual baseball fan, but the diehard Michigan Wolverine supporters is going to go to a Michigan baseball game and take their whole family. I think there's a lot to be said for that.
You mentioned it briefly. If these teams are done playing in June, they'd still be able to have summer leagues. But for the leagues that start in May or early June, would you anticipate them pushing their start dates back or maybe pulling from D2, D3, and junior college players until the D1 season is over?
Yeah, that would have to be figured out, of course. You know, and I don't know exactly how that would all work. You know, maybe you just change the model a little bit, move it back a little bit, or maybe, you know, like you said, you kind of find players wherever you can. You know, it's still a long way for this to become a reality, but if it comes to that, everybody needs to adapt. And I think what's in the best interest of college baseball itself should be the number one priority. And, you know, the draft will have to adapt. The summer leagues will have to adapt. I think we need to make sure that college baseball has a strong, thriving model first and foremost.
So you also mentioned the draft this year shortened to 5 rounds. So like you said, a lot of players who expected to be drafted will not get that call this year. What is that going to look like going forward, if you have any insight?
Well, I think next year, the way the agreement was written is it has to be at least 20 rounds. That was in the agreement back in March, but I suspect it won't be more than 20 rounds because I think that's really where Major League Baseball wants to end up anyway, is 20 or even less than that. Now, I sure hope they don't go below 20, you know, in perpetuity. I think that'd be a huge mistake. I think 20 would be okay. I mean, there are certainly some extraneous rounds. You don't necessarily need to go 40. But I think it makes sense to give more players opportunities rather than fewer players opportunities, you know. It's just a numbers game, and it comes down to how many affiliates they want to have, you know. And right now it seems like Major League Baseball really wants to get rid of, you know, 40-something minor league affiliates. And I don't think that's a very good idea because, again, I mean, if you're reducing the number of professional job opportunities available for baseball players, you're kind of making the whole career a less desirable path. And also getting rid of baseball in a lot of really good markets that care about it, and maybe a lot of those places don't have access to professional baseball otherwise. You know, if you're in Boise, you know, and you're rooting for the Boise Hawks, you're nowhere near a Major League Baseball team. I don't think from the ground – you know, grassroots level, it makes sense to get rid of all those pro teams. But if they do, then certainly you don't need as long of a draft. So I think that's a short-sighted vision by the commissioner and his people and some of the owners. But hopefully we can come with something of a compromise. I'd like to see a lot of these minor league affiliates continue to exist and, you know, at least a 20-round draft going forward. But there is some noise that eventually Major League Baseball wants to go even below 20 rounds as the permanent solution, and hopefully it doesn't come to that.
Yeah, that's something we've talked about a lot in recent weeks, is the minor league contraction plan and how it's not going to be good for, like you said, communities that aren't anywhere near Major League Baseball. A lot of fans become baseball fans through minor league baseball, so that's something that we're going to be really sad to see if that goes through.
Yeah, and you know, I was one of those, you know, and I grew up in Massachusetts. You know, we had Fenway Park there, but it was expensive to go to games. And if you wanted to have a more affordable experience, you'd go down to Pawtucket, you know, and that's where I fell in love with baseball, was going to Postdocs games and going to see the Pittsfield Mets and the New Britain Red Sox, and, you know, driving all around the country with my dad going to minor league baseball games. That's where the seed was planted for me, and I know a lot of people have stories like that.
So a lot of summer collegiate leagues have canceled their seasons already for this year, and no one knows what this summer is going to look like, but are you trying to make any plans to get out and see any college summer baseball this year?
I'm going to see whatever I can. We'll see, you know, who plays. I think right now the Coastal Plain League is still planning to play in my area, so if that happens, I'm sure I'll see plenty of Coastal Plain League games. Usually, you know, I spend a good chunk of the summer up at the Cape. That is not going to happen this year. There will be no Cape Cod League season. I know the Valley League is canceled as well, which is sad. All these leagues have a lot of history, and I'm sure it hurts for them to not have seasons, but I think those were responsible decisions. And I don't know what's going to happen. It's really hard for me to envision, frankly, Summer League Baseball going forward, considering if you read the proposal from Major League Baseball about all the things they need to do for them to have a season, it just seems really hard for me to imagine that summer leagues are going to be able to do all that too and make it work, you know. And then you factor in the host family situation. I mean, how is that going to work? Where are these players going to stay? What if a player starts to get infected? Then you have to go back and trace who he's been in contact with, and what if there's an outbreak? I mean, it just feels like it's going to be very difficult to make it work. And we'll see, you know, we'll see if it happens. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like it's still a little ambitious for all these leagues that think they're going to have seasons.
Yeah, well, I hope we get some kind of baseball this summer, because I'm going to have some serious withdrawals if we don't have anything. All right, Aaron, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast this week. I really appreciate your insight, and I hope you're doing well.
Absolutely. It's good talking with you.
So that was Aaron Fitt of D1Baseball.com talking about the changing landscape of the college baseball world. We talked a little bit about Bowling Green and Furman cutting their baseball programs, and it is a very sad situation, I feel, for all those players and coaches of each of those programs who are now without a baseball team at their school. It's a really sad situation for those guys. So hopefully we won't see too many more colleges cut their baseball teams, but I'm not too optimistic, and you heard Aaron, he wasn't too optimistic about it either. It looks like we're going to continue to see this trend as universities and colleges deal with the economic effects of COVID-19, and their athletics departments have to get their budget in order, and so they're going to have to cut the programs that don't bring in any money. Unfortunately, football and basketball is where all the money is, and so other teams like the baseball team, like soccer, swimming, tennis, those kinds of sports don't bring in a lot of money, and they're unfortunately going to be the ones that end up getting cut. It is a very sad situation. So that's the lowdown on college baseball right now, but shifting gears a little bit to Major League Baseball, we're still not exactly sure what the 2020 season is going to look like. There have been rumors and leaks of plans and proposals. Nothing's been confirmed yet. Nothing has been decided. Nobody really knows what's going to happen. It seems like every time we get close, we take a couple steps back. And this week, Chipper Jones, the Atlanta Braves Hall of Famer, said that he is not very optimistic about the 2020 season. He was on CBS Sports Radio on Wednesday, and he said, quote, "In all honesty, I'm a little less optimistic than I was 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, after listening to some key players coming out and speaking out on it. They continue to squabble over dollars and cents, salaries, revenue sharing, and all that kind of stuff. There's 30 million people out there that's out of work, and the last thing they want to hear is a bunch of millionaires and billionaires squabble over maybe getting 30 to 35% of their salaries this year. Squabbling over money is probably 7th or 8th on the list of most important things to talk about first. Obviously, the health measures and whatnot are the most important thing," end quote. Now, I've seen this is kind of a trend, that these former players who have already gotten their money, they're out of the game, they're not putting their lives at risk going out there to play baseball where they could still get infected with COVID-19. And they're saying that the players need to suck it up and just play their game. And now, I love Chipper Jones. I think he's a great guy. Obviously a great player. But the players are right to fight for their money in this situation. They had an agreement with the owners that they would get paid a prorated salary based on how many games they play in 2020. And the owners want to go back on that. So yeah, it does kind of look bad from the perspective of people, average Americans who have lost their jobs or who are making far less than millions of dollars. But these players are completely right to fight for the money that they have earned and that they deserve to be paid. The owners shouldn't have agreed to pay them this prorated salary if they weren't planning on honoring that commitment. And I don't know why it's always the players that come out looking bad in these kinds of situations. Every time players ask for more money, people criticize them. But no one ever criticizes the owners. And I think we're starting to see a trend where people are more on the players' side in these kinds of situations. And I think that's good. And I think in this case, the players have to fight for what they think is a fair agreement. Now, I do want baseball in 2020. Obviously, I want the Major League Baseball to begin its season. And I don't want a salary dispute to be the thing that holds it up. If there is a way that they can play baseball safely and get at least half of a season in, then I want that. And I would be really upset if the salary disagreement is what stops that from happening. But I do support the players in this situation. Now, unfortunately, Trey Lyle could not join me on today's episode of the podcast. He was, again, busy with some other stuff going on, but he will be back next week when we put out next week's episode on Wednesday. So I hope you all tune in next week for the return of Trey Lyle. We will get back to doing our Hall of Fame candidacy debates. We're going to take a look at Dustin Pedroia on Wednesday and whether or not he will make it into Cooperstown one day. Also, we will continue to talk about our Best Seasons blog series. Make sure to check that out on the blog at foulballarea.com. There is a whole category of these posts, so you can just click on the category over on the right side that says Best Seasons, and you can see all the posts that we've done so far. Like I said, starting on the National League Central, we did the Cubs yesterday, doing the Reds today, and we will do the Brewers tomorrow. So stay up to date with the blog at foulballarea.com. Once again, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you're listening. Subscribe, rate it, share it. Get the word out there about Foul Ball Area. I really appreciate it if you do. That's all I've got for today's episode. Thank you all for tuning in to a special Friday edition of the Foul Ball Area podcast. Thanks again to Aaron Fitt for joining me on today's episode. I'm Matthew Atkins, and we'll see you all next week.